This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Chefs, writers, scholars, and restaurateurs will gather over the next 2 days for the first annual Carolina Food Summit. By building community around food, they hope to change food policy. Among other topics, conference attendees are invited to reimagine school lunches and rethink ways to include all the hands that move a meal from farm to table in the conversation about sustainable food in North Carolina. I've got two keynote speakers with me in the studio this morning. Charlotte Ammons is a Community Food Systems Outreach Coordinator at NC State University. Welcome back, Charlotte. Good to have you.
Good to be here.
And Inez Ribastello is co-owner of On the Square Restaurant in Tarboro. Hello, Inez.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing very well. On the phone with us now is Cecilia Polanco. She's a recent UNC graduate and is launching a food truck soon called the So Good Pupusas. Welcome, Cecilia.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Charlotte, let me start with you. The summit is the end result of a lot of brainstorming and conversations. Tell us about the sort of the concept around the summit.
Well, correction, I went North Carolina A&T, Aggie Pride. Let me get that right.
Oh, yeah, get that right. Sure.
So, the summit was actually born out of a series of conversations that the Jamie Kirk Hahn Foundation, along with NNC, put together called Gathering for Good. And as a part of the foundation, member of the board, and also as a member of North Carolina A&T and CEFS, I was very fortunate to be able to facilitate some of those conversations around topics like school lunch and nutrition, health systems and health disparities, and with the goal of kind of just disrupting the comfort of the food movement and allowing people to think differently about who's not included.
Wait, so yeah, let's talk a little bit more about that. What's comfortable about the food movement and who's being left out of the conversation?
Who's often left out? People who are most marginalized, people who are most affected by food system disparities, which is mostly Black, Latino farm workers, immigrant farm workers, people who usually work the back of the house and can't afford the food that's being served out front. So it was an opportunity for us to really push the boundaries of and the comfort level of people who often drive decision making, and really just kind of think about systems differently and how to really disrupt those systems.
And part of this, and I think the framework for this summit, is to develop conversations and stories around food as a way of reshaping our thinking, right?
Absolutely. The narrative is not inclusive. So really thinking about folks like me who grew up in places that often get invisibilized through larger systems.
Where'd you grow up?
Mount Olive, North Carolina.
There you go. And when you say that, you think about a huge food production system.
Absolutely.
You were part of that. You worked in fields, right? Cucumbers.
Right. Me and so many other people, you know, my mom, aunts, uncles. So the story isn't anything new because it's still the same, a very similar situation down that way today. So that's the excitement of the summit, that we can really reshape the narrative around food and food systems.
Well, let's get a preview of some of those stories. Cecilia Polanco, your story is about understanding food as a way to promote cultural awareness. You graduated from UNC last May, right?
Mm-hmm.
About to open a food truck. So when and why did you decide that you wanted to go into the food business?
I'm not sure that I necessarily chose the food business. The food business chose me, and it's been a long journey. It started as an idea my first year here at Carolina because of an experience I had bringing friends home from Chapel Hill to Durham, where I grew up and where I live now, bringing friends home to Durham to meet my parents, that I realized they were experiencing another part of my identity. They knew me as their peer at UNC, as the Tar Heel, but they would come home and get to know me as Cecilia, the daughter, learn more about my heritage. And I always told them to come hungry because my mom is going to feed you, and more likely than not, we're going to have pupusas. And from that experience, from initially just being a meal with friends, I realized that it's also a way to bridge communities and to promote cultural exploration and appreciation, more than just tolerance, but also just a getting to know people that are different from us, cultures that are different from us. And I wanted to explode that situation, that experience, and magnify it on the scale of a food truck so that I can reach more people and impact more communities.
Well, tell us more about your heritage. Your parents are from El Salvador, right?
Yes, my parents were both born and raised in El Salvador. And in the early 80s, my father emigrated to the United States seeking political asylum because of the civil war that was happening in El Salvador at the time. And soon after, he brought over my mother and brought over my three older sisters, who were all born in El Salvador, to Los Angeles, California. I was born there a couple of years later, and then we decided to migrate once again, another 3,000 miles from coast to coast to Durham, North Carolina, where there were more job opportunities.
Now, Cecilia, you tell your story and you talk about wanting people to understand you personally more deeply and understand your cultural heritage. But I also understand that, like Charlotte, you see a real political component in this, a connection between food and social justice, a larger picture than just your story. Tell us about that connection and how you came to it, because I understand you didn't always see it that way.
So, coming to Carolina has been a blessing. When I was in high school, I kind of worried about getting into college and how I would pay for college. But I've been so fortunate to be a recipient of the Moorhead Caine Scholarship, a full merit-based scholarship to UNC, and also a scholarship from the campus-wide called the Global Gap Year Fellowship to take a gap year. So all of those scholarships and many more I received during my time here opened doors and opportunities for me to learn and grow and reach my full potential as a student, as a learner here at the university. And I'm so thankful for that. And during that time, I came to realize some of the privileges I had. Not just, the struggles and things I've been through on my journey, but also the ways I had advantages. And one of those is my status, being that I am documented, that I was born in the United States and have citizenship. Many of the scholarships and opportunities, programs, traveling I did, I wouldn't have been able to do had I been undocumented, had I had undocumented status. And that's really just a matter of whether I was born here or not, or was brought here as a child for many students. And I think that that's an injustice within our school systems, our higher education systems, that there are students who go through the public school programs in North Carolina, graduate, get into some of the best colleges across the country, but are unable to go just because their documented status makes them ineligible for a lot of funding. And I think that that's an injustice. I've met so many students who are just as smart as me, if not smarter, just as talented, just as deserving, but aren't able to benefit from the same opportunities I've had. And I want to pay forward the blessings I've had so more students can have the same opportunities
And you're going to do that by essentially starting two businesses, the food truck, which will be a for-profit business, and also a nonprofit foundation to help students. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. We wanted to start the food truck first because with the business itself is what will create the means for us to have a scholarship. So without the money, there's no mission. So we have the food truck business, we have the catering company that we're getting off the ground. We've been in operation for about a year, and our partner nonprofit is called Pupusas for Education. Pupusas for Education will run the scholarship program, hopefully grow into a larger, more comprehensive program. But that's how we've determined that this partnership is how we can best reach out to the communities we want to serve.
Inez Ribostello, your story, your personal narrative is about reclaiming your rural ways. You settled in Tarboro now, but you were in New York City before this. Tell us about that.
I was born and raised in Tarboro, a proud Tarboro High Viking, and I moved up to New York after going to Chapel Hill to go to culinary school. And I obviously really enjoyed the cooking, but I ended up enjoying the wine side, the accompaniment to cooking more so, and was able to get a job at Windows on the World in One World Trade Center, which is where I met my husband. And we ended up coming back to Tarboro after September 11th. So I was fortunate enough to marry someone from New York who wanted to come back to where I was born and raised. and he is the chef at our restaurant, and I am the head bus girl, although...
But you know a thing or two about wine.
A few things.
Well, tell us about, you say wanted to come back. You're lucky enough to have a husband who wanted to come back. That word want, it's in quotes initially, right?
Right, for sure. You know, Tarboro is... it's moving forward every day, but it's an economically depressed small town in eastern rural North Carolina. And when we started the restaurant in 2002, there was, I would say, no healthy eating. You know, you didn't see avocados on a lunchtime menu, and you didn't see green beans that weren't cooked in bacon. And you certainly didn't see people utilizing the produce that came from the farms in the proximity to the town. And my husband had always said, you know, when you go to Europe, the best food is in the small villages, countryside. But in America, you have to go to New York City or Chicago or San Francisco to eat really well. You don't go to small towns to eat.
And of course,
really
the irony is we grow some of the finest food in
exactly.
America in this soil.
We're so close to these great farms and farmers. So why aren't we in essence giving back by buying the produce from our neighbors? It's so much better for everything. And so that was in 2002, and since that time, I think there's been an explosive movement, not just in Tarboro, towns like Tarboro, but in Durham, Raleigh, Chapel Hill, and everyone, I think our generation and younger are realizing how important it is, too.
Well, you and your husband started a club at your daughter's school called Food Matters.
Yes.
Tell us about that and what impact it's had.
So my children are at the newest global school in Tarboro, a part of the Edgecombe County Public Schools. And the principal there wanted clubs to start. And so people would do everything from yoga to Legos. And we started one called Food Matters. And it has been an absolute blast, you know, between working a lot and raising our children. This was one thing that we could really get into. It's twice a month. We go to the school and we try to incorporate global concepts by doing different recipes and different fun things that the children have never seen, you know.
Well, and Tarboro, like many other areas, most other areas of this state now, have increasingly resegregated their school systems, and you find that in that county.
Very
same way
so.
You encountered that, and to what extent does this either play into that or break that apart?
Well, just like Charlotte said, it's very clear who the have-nots are. And in public school, certainly in Tarboro, you see much more have-nots than haves, and specifically children of color and children whose parents do not have the means to buy the really great produce. And so we, part of this Food Matters, it's the name of the club, is showing these kids how they can create healthy dishes and not have to break the bank.
Well, Charlotte, talk more about you. You mentioned your time in the cucumber fields and how you're sort of reclaiming the narrative. What do you mean by that? What does that mean to say, you know, I have rural roots here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think just in hearing Inez, some of the things that she mentioned, you know, the idea of haves and have-nots, and I think oftentimes rural people are seen as caricatures of what it means to be urban, you know, which is a part of exploiting the wedge, you know, because you can always, with that narrative, you can always say, at least I'm not them, you know. And so that's the beauty and the point, I think, a part of these conversations happening, like Gathering for Good, like the summit that's coming up. We get the opportunity to really, you know, really examine that shared fate. I mean, we're all kind of in the same, you know, same waters in a lot of ways. And so I think, you know, I think that's really important that we reclaim that narrative. And I think that's kind of the interesting kind of play on words with reanimating rural, which is the part of the panel that I'm a part of at the summit, because people don't always see us as real people. I mean, they just have this negative connotation associated. But we have a very deep and rich legacy, and we have a very deep association with the land because it is us. It reminds us of us. We know what it's like to be forgotten about. We know what it's like to not be cared for and paid attention to.
Well, one of the things it seems to me that forced that wedge and created the disconnect between rural people and the food they create is industrial agriculture, which it was commodified and treated as a substance, sustenance, but it was a commodity, and your time was commodified in the field.
Right, and institutional racism, let's call it what it is. And, you know, and the most drudgerous labor for the least amount of compensation was placed on the backs of people of color. And I think that's kind of the tradition that we come from, and I think that's a part of the reclamation that needs to happen too, you know, because, you know, the assumption as a result of those narratives is that people of color don't want to eat healthy or they don't want to you know, access to land and good food. And, you know, and it's just not the case.
Apart from the story we tell ourselves and the ways in which we reinforce it, what are some of the other barriers to access to sustainably raised whole foods? What are some of the things in the way?
I think what's the young lady's name on the phone?
She touched
on so many things. She was really on point, you know, just this idea of these imaginary lines of what it means to represent or to be a citizen, this idea of belonging, like you don't belong. All those are barriers to me. I mean, that's a part of the narrative, but it's also a part of how you're able to enter spaces. So you can't go and get a good, you can't be a part of economic success because of that narrative and that sense like that you're an outcast and you don't belong.
There's also education.
Absolutely.
Well, education in what, Inez? What sort of?
Well, I mean, you think of education in public schools, for example. Mm-hmm. They're teaching the core curriculum. They're trying to get everybody, you know, to be successful in end of grade testing, and there's very little focus on health or food, and these children, often of color, are not knowing about how great, you know, a persimmon could be, or have never seen it, never heard of it, and nobody's focusing on it. Whereas you go into private schools, which are most often white, and they are going out to eat dinners at nice places where it's, you know, on the square, $20 a person. It's not a big deal for these children to go eat out once a week and see different things. Mm-hmm. But in the public school system, that's unusual, certainly in rural areas.
And Charlotte, you were once involved in the project. Now, I don't know if it's still going on in Eastern North Carolina, where you engaged kids in the food process and got them going in the supply chain so that they understood what it meant to get this food from farm to table.
Right. And we did a couple of programs down that way. And there's a lot of work that's still thriving down in Eastern North Carolina. And it's mostly about creating access to opportunities, which often, you know, again, the wedge idea is it gets prescribed as, you know, you're giving them handouts. Or, mm-hmm. No, it's about, you know, people having the opportunity to see what's next for them. That's what opportunity is about. And, you know, and I think, you know, a good friend of mine often says, you know, that we're a part of the system and the system is in us. So how do we break that down so that we're able to get out of the way so that opportunity can happen for those who need it the most?
And it seems we don't have much time left, but it seems great opportunities for jobs as well. I mean, in this mm-hmm. supply chain, there's room for processing, there's room for growing sustainably raised things. And that means local ownership, wealth building, instead of working for a cucumber company,
you own the
plant. That could be part of what's going on. I'm assuming that's going to be part of the conversation.
That's
if not, call me. You know,
We know who to call. Yeah, right. CarolinaFoodSummit.com. There's tickets available. Go online and join us if you can.
I want to thank you all for being on the program. Charlotte Ammons, Community Food Systems Outreach Coordinator at North Carolina A&T. Inez Ribostello is co-owner of On the Square Restaurant in Tarboro and Tarboro Brewing Company. And Cecilia Polanco, founder of the food truck So Good Pupusas. Thank you all for being on the program.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
They're participating in the first annual Carolina Food Summit beginning tomorrow in Chapel Hill. We have details at our website, stateofthings.org. Coming up, we're going to talk about worker-owned cooperatives and their impact on the community, building wealth in communities. You'll hear about it on the State of Things. Stay tuned.